Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Marina Levinson to the broadcast. Marina is a partner at Benemu Global Ventures, an early-stage venture capital firm based in Silicon Valley. She's also the founder and CEO of CIO Advisory Group, which provides technology advice to CEOs, private equity firms, and startups. In addition to that work, Marina also serves on the boards of several companies, including the mortgage software provider Ellie Mae, HP's networking arm Aruba Networks, and the cloud services provider SnapLogic. Prior to her current position at Benemu Global Ventures, Marina served as the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of NetApp, where she was responsible for the global IT functions of the organization. Prior to that, she served as the CIO of Palm, the maker of the Palm Pilot, which was later sold to HP. Marina is a highly awarded executive who received the CIO 100 Award in 2001, 2004, and between 2009 and 11, as well as a Computer World Premier 100 Award winner in 2004. Marina received her Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from the St. Petersburg Institute of Precision Mechanics and Optics in Russia in 1979. I recently caught up with Marina in her office in Silicon Valley, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed the culture of the technology industry and her career path from CIO to venture capital community. Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed the major role that security has continued to play for major organizations. Principle 5, External Partnerships, as she discussed the needs of CIOs to develop an ecosystem of external partners, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as Strategic Facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Marina Levinson, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you.
Marina, I thought we would begin with your current set of activities. Some listeners will certainly know you as the former CIO of NetApp, where you spent nearly 6.5 years, also as CIO of Palm for another 6 years before that. But it's been a while since you've been a full-time CIO, and a lot of your time has been spent in recent years in a variety of ways in the venture capital realm, capped off with your joining Benemu Global Ventures as a partner. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that career path that you have taken from CIO to VC, how the opportunities presented themselves to you, and frankly, how it occurred to you to pursue that career path, which is quite an unusual one for a former CIO.
Yes, it is. And actually, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think it's a very attractive career path for technologists, including CIOs. So it's actually interesting that not that many CIOs decide to pursue this career path. But in order for you to understand how I got there, just a little bit of background on me. Already mentioned my tenure as CIOs of Palm and NetApp. Before becoming a CIO of Palm, I was actually a senior IT executive at 3Com. I was there for more than 12 years, and when 3Com decided to spin off Palm, I got an opportunity to go to Palm to be their first CIO. But as part of my tenure at both 3Com and Palm, I worked for Eric Benemu, who was CEO and chairman of 3Com and chairman of Palm. And when I left Palm to go to NetApp, we continued our relationship and stayed in touch. So when I decided to leave corporate life, leave NetApp and start my own technology advisory business called CIO Advisory Group, Eric became one of my clients. And the focus for my CIO advisory group was really to bring together CIOs, VCs, private equity, their portfolio companies, and have this ability to exchange ideas for mutual benefit. Obviously, for VCs and their portfolio companies and private equity firms, it's important to understand how CIOs think, what kind of buying decisions they're making, what kind of strategies they have, which is kind of here and now. It also gives an opportunity for them to present their portfolio companies that can find early adopters of their technologies. From the CIO perspective, being exposed to new technology innovation, especially now when there is this tremendous shift from old technology world to the new technology world, it's a great opportunity to understand where technology is going. VCs clearly are very forward moving. They're investing into something that will be probably big in the next 12, 18, 24 months. And that's a great opportunity for CIOs to understand that and include some of those interesting trends and ideas in their long-term strategies. So I worked with a number of VCs. I'm still advising Andreessen Horowitz. I've been part of that organization for almost 3 years. Again, helping them with the CIO outreach program, advising their portfolio companies, and helping them understand how to be more effective in selling to senior IT decision makers, whether it's CIOs or their direct reports. I've been working with Eric for about a year, and he was quite pleased with some of the contribution that I made. I actually really was interested in how investment decisions are made. You know, I've been on the other side so many times, being sold to by companies big and small, and being on the other side trying to decide what to invest in and whether those technologies will be sellable, so to speak, to decision makers. It's kind of an interesting perspective, kind of two sides of the same coin, so to speak. So when Eric raised his second fund about a year and a half ago, he offered me to join him as a partner, and I did in April last year. So I've been, a full-time partner with him for a little bit more than a year. The fund is very much focused on enterprise IT, which is kind of my bread and butter. I understand that quite well. And we focus on investing in companies in the area of cybersecurity, cloud, mobile, and new data centers, software-defined data centers. So that's kind of our umbrella of investment. And it's been a terrific ride. I mean, I learned a lot. What I bring to the table, and that would be kind of our segue into the how do you change your career path if you're interested in venture. My experience buying technology proved to be actually quite valuable. In our VC firm, we have six partners. Five of them are here in the United States, and one of them is in Israel, and we do a lot of our deals. Actually, we source a lot of deals in Israel, especially in the area of cybersecurity, where they're extremely strong, specifically in that domain. But I bring a buyer's perspective to the due diligence. I bring my connections in the enterprise IT world, again, to due diligence. And my experience in building a team, sourcing talent, hiring, developing talent, proved to be very applicable and transferable skills to a VC world. Where I'm still learning from my partners, and my partners are all former very senior operational execs. I guess that's kind of what separates us from a traditional VC firm. We all came from the operational background. We've all been C-level executives, whether we were CEOs, CMOs, CIOs, and then we transitioned into more of an investing world. I'm probably the only one that doesn't have a very strong investing experience. And this is the area of development for me, and I'm certainly partnering with all my partners, trying to understand how do you do good investments from the financial standpoint. But the value that I add, I think, is understanding the technology and end-to-end technology and how technology is being used by the enterprise, what works, what doesn't work. And also, as I said, bring my network to bear. I created Technology Advisory Circle for the firm. So we have a pretty deep bench of technologists that we can go to and ask them to help us with some due diligence on the companies.
And what do you look for in the CIOs who you have asked to join that technology advisory group?
I look for people that are thought leaders and also deep technologists. There is probably two classes of CIOs, as you well know. There are some people that are very strong CIOs that come from the business background, and there are CIOs that grow through the ranks, and they're more of a technologist. Just because we're an early stage fund, we need more deep technical expertise. But we're looking for people that are early adopters that can envision how new technologies could be applied in the enterprise. And people that are not afraid to provide their feedback. And if they think that something would not work, they will be not shy to express their ideas. As a matter of fact, as part of the Technology Advisory Circle, we have both CIOs as well as CTOs. So we really try to balance a business perspective with technology overlay, with also very deep technical knowledge in specific domains that we invest in.
That's great. Marina, in some ways, it's logical, given your background, given your proximity to Silicon Valley and the fact that you worked in that milieu for so long, and of course, the contacts you gained through the course of your time at 3Com and Palm, especially for those CIOs who are not in Silicon Valley, who are far afield from there, in fact, and don't have ready access to this community. Is there advice you would offer them on how best to penetrate the VC community to begin to develop some of the appropriate contacts to do some of the things you've been able to do?
I think it's very important to build relationships and build relationships based on trust as well as relationship built on the need to bring innovation into the enterprise. I firmly believe that in business, you really need to work on creating a win-win for CIOs as well as win-win for VCs. In Silicon Valley, it's very easy because we have innovation everywhere. But if a person is either on the East Coast or Midwest, I would certainly encourage people to attend some of the conferences where startups present their ideas and their companies, get to know the founders of those companies, really display some curiosity. Sometimes when you're a CIO, certainly been there for more than 12 years, it's a very, especially in a growth environment, it's a very demanding role. It's basically 24/7 operational responsibilities. And sometimes it's difficult to take the time to think strategically and think for the future. So I would definitely advise CIOs to spend some time understanding what they want to do in the next 2, 3 years, 4 years, how technology can really enable transformation in the business, because I really don't believe in technology for technology's sake. CIOs have a great perspective because they understand technology, they understand the business, at least the successful ones, and they are the main, as I believe, potentially innovation officers in the enterprise. By embracing that a call for innovation, they can actually proactively search for some startups as well as get to know some VC companies. A lot of VCs right now create CIO advisory boards. Certainly, the company that I'm associated with, Andreessen Horowitz, has a phenomenal CIO outreach program and senior executive outreach program. They do a lot of briefings. They really try to create an environment where CIOs are very welcome, and they help them not only to get to know their portfolio companies, but they also, through their point of view, trying to help CIOs to envision how their strategies could shift from the old world, so to speak, to the new world. My advice is be proactive. And if the C world have some attraction for you, you have to proactively be part of that world while you're still a CIO and really build a reputation of an innovator. Because once you leave and decide to be a consultant, or you decide that, you know, you want to be a VC, it's a pretty insular community. So it's very important to have a reputation and relationships while you're still, so to speak, in the captain's seat. That's my my biggest advice for CIOs.
Good advice indeed. Although not quite as rare as the leap from CIO to VC, another relatively rare, though growing, club is CIOs who've gained board access. Granted, some of your most recent board positions have been post-CIO. Nevertheless, I'm guessing that some of your background as CIO has certainly contributed mightily to the interest that some of these companies, Ellie Mae included, publicly traded organization. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that experience as well, your participation in boards and how your experience as a former technology executive, current technology investor, how that colors your involvement and the way in which you provide advice to these companies.
So my history with Ellie Mae actually precedes my role on the board. I got involved with them early on because they asked me to create a technology advisory board for them. They were one of my first clients when I started my technology advisory business, CIO advisory group. So I created that technology advisory board for them, and I ran it for 2.5 years, got to know the company, got to know the challenges, got to know the opportunities, was a trusted advisor for the CEO and president and the CTO. And when the board made a decision that they wanted to bring a technologist on the board, because fundamentally, Ellie Mae is a technology company, but they really didn't have anyone with deep technology experience on the board, the CEO approached me, gauged my interest, and I interviewed with everyone on the board. And the chemistry was immediate, and I joined them as a board member last August, initially as a member of the audit committee. We created a technology committee in December 2014, and I'm now incoming chairman of the technology committee starting in June. So I will be running that. We decided to actually add another technologist. I can't yet disclose the name of the person, well-known in the industry, but I will get another partner with a very deep technology expertise on the board. The reason is really twofold. One, cybersecurity is becoming a very much of a top of mind for the boards. They wanted to make sure that they have someone that can ask the right questions and understand the answers and really manage the risk associated with potential cybersecurity breaches. And then specifically in Ellie Mae case, because it's a technology company developing SaaS software in the origination and management space, they want someone who could be a mentor and understand also the technology considerations and challenges that they have from the business perspective. That's why we are adding a second person to the board.
Excellent. I wonder also for others who are interested in gaining board access, is there any difference in the advice that you would offer to CIOs in order to begin to become more board ready? Or perhaps it may be the same kind of advice you just offered, as of course the VC community is a great stepping stone to these kinds of opportunities.
I think VC community is a great stepping stone for these opportunities because through the relationships with VCs, you can get on private boards. And though private boards are very different from public boards, I think it's also a pretty exciting way to share your expertise and help build companies and help drive the strategy in the right direction. With public companies, I think I would encourage CIOs to become known for their innovation, become known for some of the terrific achievements that they deliver to their individual enterprises, because unless this is known, how would the boards be able to identify those folks? I think I heard some statistics, read some statistics that 70% of the board searches happen through relationships and never taken to executive recruiters. And I think 30% are done through the executive recruiters. I would encourage CIOs to create relationships, not only with recruiters that specialize in technology and recruiting for technology positions, but also get to know their board practice and make sure that, you know, they are known as Spencer Stewart and Heidrichs and Struggles and Russell Reynolds. They also need to understand what boards are interested in. Get to know your own board. I had a lot of experience presenting to the board and working with the board and presenting to the audit committee. So really understanding what boards are interested in and build your skills to support that, I think, is very important. And frankly, right now, cybersecurity is one of the key issues why boards want to bring a technologist on board. And the second reason is digital enterprise. Digital, social, bringing people that have experience with new technologies. My advice is make sure that you are an expert in those two areas and you will be in demand.
Marina, can talk a little bit more about some of those very trends that you highlighted in terms of some of the technologies or some of the areas of focus that are particularly intriguing to you. You've certainly mentioned security for very good reason on multiple occasions in our conversation. You've begun to talk a little bit about digital business that is certainly becoming more pervasive, and especially for particularly creative CIOs, more within the bailiwick and areas of responsibility for chief information officers. Can you talk a little bit about in those areas or others trends that represent what you believe to be some of the best areas to investigate?
Yeah. So when I think about the rate of adoption of new technologies, when I was an IT executive, and I lived through the era of client server and, you know, mini computers and cloud before I left NetApp. But the rate of adoption of new technologies, whether it's mobile, whether it's SaaS, whether it's cloud, has been absolutely unprecedented. And what I see right now, again, from my vantage point, looking at investing, I see a lot of focus right now on customer experience and business analytics versus delivering cost efficiencies. And this is an opportunity for IT to contribute to revenue growth of their individual companies. And it's interesting because it's probably also related to the economic cycle that we're in. I was a CIO and went through both the 2000-2001 dot-com era. I also went through the financial crisis of 2008. And priorities definitely change depending whether you're in a growth cycle or you're in the downturn. And right now we're clearly in the growth cycle, which could flip. And if we are, again, in a downturn and recession, then cost efficiencies will become vital and very, very important. But what I see right now is focus more on the customer facing technologies and business analytics that are also focused on customer. Also, cloud and SaaS right now is no longer bleeding or leading edge. It's now mainstream. And actually, it is these trends driving new data center strategies. So there is hybrid clouds, there's virtualization of everything. And CIOs are really started to be interested in what's my new data center strategy? How do I deliver innovation faster? How do I use these technologies to actually deliver cycle times that are Facebook or Google type of cycle times versus old technology cycle times? And then I think consumerization of IT created very definite expectations on the part of the users that come to work. And they expect mobile experience. They expect consumer user experience. And I certainly have a lot of experience implementing SAPs of the world and Oracles of the world and user interface in the 90s and the 2000s is not something that CIOs paid attention to. They really focused on can we deliver the capabilities? And if capabilities are there, though they're complex and difficult to use, you have to use 10 screens to do order entry. It doesn't matter. Now user experience does matter. And it's almost like a revolution in terms of how consumerization impacts enterprise IT. Already mentioned cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is definitely top of mind for CEOs and board of directors, which is a huge change from even 4 years ago. And every time we have a board meeting, every quarter, we talk about cybersecurity. And I know that we're not alone. And I'm a member of NACD and National Association of Corporate Directors, and a lot of materials right now that they send is around educating directors around cybersecurity issues, what questions to ask, who to engage with to help them to ensure that their enterprises are properly protected. So that's a huge trend. And another one that's kind of interesting, I haven't seen that in my 25-plus years in IT. What I see right now is all traditional IT vendors are under siege. And it's never been a better time to be a startup selling into the enterprise IT, especially in some areas like cybersecurity. It's a pretty fragmented space. And if a startup can deliver a capability, it's no problem. Nobody gets fired for buying IBM is no longer true. And I'm using IBM here in jest because it's an expression, but I think all traditional IT vendors are under siege right now, and there's a great opportunity for new companies to become leaders. And I think it's a great opportunity now for IT organizations to drive and deliver innovation. And I see them much more willing to invest in startup technologies, which is different from even 4, 5, 6 years ago. This rate of change influences buying behavior. This is good for VCs. This is good for portfolio companies. Cybersecurity, I already mentioned that anything new that delivers perceived value sells. Traditional IT infrastructure not related to cloud is more difficult to sell for startups. So we're trying to focus on newer technologies and leave all the more traditional technologies to incumbent vendors. And I think probably the biggest change is that CIOs are not the only buyers of technology anymore. Because of SaaS, because of cloud, business functions are driving this bottoms-up adoption. And CIOs really need to figure out how to become aggregators, how to become service providers. And they really need to feel comfortable that they no longer control everything. They need to become much better partners to their business functions. So not only enable those technologies, they are not no longer perceived as barriers to innovation. Another thing I want to say, I see a lot of hype and experimentation with big data, but I think there is still somewhat limited success beyond some of the verticals that use big data very effectively, like CPG, like financials. And I think this is where we will see more and more adoption and innovation. And I think mobile analytics is the next frontier.
Great. Well, Marina Levinson, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing a variety of your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much, Peter. It was a pleasure.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows.
Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.